is the Phil Hendry Show, 1-800-449-8686.
Well, Howard Dean is done. And, you know, pretty soon, what's his name, John Kerry or Bob Kerry, whichever guy didn't kill them Vietnamese, he'll be done. Yes, this is your Democrat, Phil Hendry, speaking. Sorry, but I just don't go, as my wife likes to say, I think outside of the box. The sandbox, that is. The cat box. Howard Dean finished a distant second to John Kerry in New Hampshire. Kerry, 38% of the vote. Howard Dean got 26% of the vote. Then it was Wesley Clark with 13%. He's kicking some ass. John Edwards, 12%. Joseph Lieberman, 9%. Dennis Kucinich, 1%. Alfred E. Newman, 1%. Mickey Mouse captured another 1%. And on it goes. So for Howard Dean, it's... And back to New Hampshire, where he'll be the governor, I guess. Ain't he the governor anymore? No, he ain't governor, right? He'll go back to New Hampshire and look up babies' rear ends with a stethoscope or whatever he did. Coming up on our show, John Kerry will be our special guest at the bottom of the hour. That's right. Stick around. We're going to interview John Kerry, the senator from Massachusetts, on what he has in store for the country if he gets elected president, what he thinks the odds are of him getting elected president, and so on and so forth. But he easily outdistanced, and I say easily outdistanced, Howard Dean and other Democratic rivals for a second straight victory. Apparently, if you win or come in second in New Hampshire, you become the Democratic nominee. Or you become the nominee, I guess, of any party. So Dean ain't done yet, at least as far as historical precedent is concerned. But, see, everybody got a whiff of Dean. And I think as the months go by, Kerry is a lot more of a cool customer. So he's not some psychotic ex-governor that gets up there and screams and does the war whoop. He plays it real cool because the guy's been around Washington long enough. People say they don't want a Washington insider. They want an outsider, right? But they won't vote for an outsider because the outsiders are always very squirrely. Guy like Kerry, who's been to enough state dinners, he's been to enough social, you know, money fundraisers and functions, and he's shaken a lot of hands of old ladies and young babies and everybody in between. He gets it. He gets how to campaign. He, you know, and Kerry, when you listen to the guy, I mean, I'd love to vote for this cat if he said anything, but he doesn't say anything. He says nothing. He's into veterans' rights, okay? Like, who isn't? Yeah, but Bush cut all the funding. Well, okay, Bush cut all the funding. Name me a president that hasn't. Name me a guy that's really had, you know, the veterans at heart, uppermost in his mind, or, you know, at mind, uppermost in his heart, you know, and actually followed through. So then what else does the guy do? He's into health care. Well, that's the big one. Everybody says health care is second on the list to national security. There ain't anybody ever had anything. Look at, you know, Clinton had a great health care idea, too. It didn't even make it through the front door of Congress. He couldn't even get in through the toilet window. Remember that? Remember him and Hillary would spend, you know, nights agonizing over this thing. They had a card everybody was going to use. They had a national program. Nah, forget it. All you got to do is drop that word, socialize this and socialize that, and people start to crap themselves. They don't want to see that. You know, they don't want to have anything to do with that. What else is he going to do? He wants a multilateral approach in Iraq. Well, I tell you what, if you are proposing a unilateral approach in Iraq and you're the president, then if you're a Democrat, I guess you have to say multilateral. Why? Because that's opposite of what George Bush is saying. Because I guarantee you this, if Bush was saying multilateral, Kerry'd be saying unilateral. Just whatever he's saying, just say the opposite. So multilateral, okay. So that means that what we're going to do is gradually turn it over to the international community or partner in with them on how to run Iraq. Yeah, uh-huh. Sure. Yeah, we really worked well with those cats. As long as we do it their way, everything's good, right? So in other words, what we're going to do is we're going to sell out all those guys that are in Iraq right now, the men and women who've died, and turn it over to the French, to the Germans, to the Russians, to the UN, to the US. We'll just go along with their program, which basically means this. This is what Kerry's talking about. We'll let the French back in by giving them the big money reconstruction contracts, and the Germans, and just make everybody happy by giving them dough, giving them a piece of the action. Now, you know, that's it. in a nutshell. That's his plan on Iraq. What's his homeland security idea? Well, we could do better at the ports by having transparent containers. We could do better with the airlines. We could just do better than what we're doing right now. Well, I don't know what else you want. What do you want to do? You know, the Patriot Act, that's no good. You see, you have to protect people's rights as well as... I read an article today, in case anybody cares. If you read it, you know what I'm talking about. If you didn't, then maybe, you know, you should. And it essentially says this. Over the last year, 17,000 complaints have been filed against the federal government law enforcement apparatus. Of those, there were a few thousand, I guess, against you know, some segment of the Justice Department. Only 17 had anything whatsoever to do with the Patriot Act. Only 17, and they were, they were claimed abuses. Nothing that was found to be an actual abuse. They were claimed, and these claims were made by non-citizens, foreigners from terror-sponsoring countries. In other words, the exact guys we're looking for. And actually, what it was these complaints were made by... they were made against people in the prison system or something, not even against FBI agents, not even against cops. So when people talk about abuses under the Patriot Act, they have yet to single out one. They don't like it, man. But with a country that just suffered the loss of 3,000 people in a terrorist attack and a country that instituted this Patriot Act, not one abuse under the Patriot Act, either allegedly by the FBI or the CIA or anybody, has been cited. So it's a whole lot of, like I said, it's just a whole lot of paranoia. It's what we've been talking about for 8, 9, 10 months, and that is they hope there's an abuse under the Patriot Act because they can stick it on their websites and scream about it at rallies or something, right? By the way, I saw the MoveOn.org ad, the anti-Bush ad. It's actually, you know, the pro-Democrat ad or the anti-Republican ad. It's actually pretty good. It's very good. I recommend you go to MoveOn.org and look at it. It's got nothing to do with Bush being Hitler. It has to do with the deficit, a $1 trillion deficit, which we don't have a $1 trillion deficit. We have a $1 trillion debt. We don't have a $1 trillion deficit. We have somewhere in the neighborhood of a $477 billion deficit. We've run deficits before. And it happens to be the philosophy of Republican presidents of recent memory that go ahead and run a lot of deficits. It's better doing that than taxing the American people. We would rather pay for, you know, bailing out the airlines, making sure that we got guys in Iraq and Afghanistan kicking some ass, making sure that we're doing all of these things without raising taxes. And you can do that, they say, by running these deficits. Eventually, when the GNP grows, things, you know, level out. That's the thinking. Reagan did it. And then when Reagan, you know, left office, we had H. Ross Perot was the first guy that started screaming about, you know, all of our kids having to pay off the deficit, right? Then we had a surplus under Clinton, which is great. Fantastic. Of course, we didn't have to bail out the airlines to the tune of $50 billion, and we didn't have a recession. We didn't have terrorist attacks. You know, there was a different world, baby. Like they say, it was a different time. All right, so that's that. So that's the ad. You got to look at it because it's compelling. Coming up, we also have Larry Grover, who will address the need for President Bush to run unopposed, because since the Democrats can't possibly win and will only make themselves look stupid, President Bush should run unopposed to show that the American voter is united. Margaret Gray will also be on to talk about how the Patriot Act and Bush's candidacy is an abomination and his paranoia has reached all-time heights. She was riding in first class. They wouldn't close the curtain behind her, and a guy in coach was staring at her. And she was afraid he wanted to molest her, and sure enough, she felt somebody squeeze her ass as she was getting off the plane. She belted the guy with her computer, and it turned out to be Frank, her husband. That's coming up on our show. Here, our email address, phs@philhendryshow.com. Don't forget, John Kerry in just minutes on The Phil Hendry Show.
Phil Hendry, 1-800-449-8686. Bill Hendry Show is back. 1-800-449-8686.
So don't forget, John Kerry is coming up on our show. That's right. And if you know anything about our show, you know it's going to be interesting. And those of you who've been listening for a long time, you just, okay. 1-800-449-8686. I always like to be clear and specific. In a moment, I'm going to tell you, I got a piece of information here. It's another Phil Hendry Show exclusive from our Middle East advisor. I have a piece of information, just 60 seconds, that will tell you why George Bush is going to get reelected president. And why the Democrats, because they really haven't offered anything, why they're going to go down in flames. In flames. 60 seconds, I'll give it to you. But first, I want to tell you, there was an interesting article on Fox News today about the final moments of Flight 11. Flight 11 was one of the planes that slammed to the World Trade Center. Apparently, one of the flight attendants, a woman by the name of Betty Ong, said the following. The cockpit is not answering the phone. There's someone stabbed in business class, and we can't breathe in business class. I think there is mace or something. Apparently, Ms. Ong was described as hysterical in preceding news accounts, which, you know, the news coverage after any major event is always very, very sketchy. It's always panicked, and it's usually wrong. But in the retrospect, when you give it a little bit of time and people can put things together, you get the real word. And of course, the word today is that she was very professional. She was very calm. She said in a very calm and professional voice, she relayed details about the events unfolding. Apparently, the passengers had no idea what was about to happen. Now, why is that significant? She said that the cockpit's not answering. That means that no one on the plane knew that the terrorists were up there. Or if they thought they were up there, they didn't know exactly what had gone on up there. That there was someone dead in business class. Now, that could have been a passenger that was standing waiting to use a can. Or it might have been another flight attendant. But it doesn't sound as if there was mayhem on the plane, like they were razoring flight attendants and kicking ass as they went down the aisle on their way to the cockpit and everybody knew that they'd been hijacked. She says, and I'm going to quote now, apparently we've been hijacked. Apparently. So she was not clear. She says, I think we're getting hijacked. She wasn't clear. They don't know what happened. They don't even know whether hijackers got into the cockpit or if they had what they were doing up there. So things happened very quickly on that airplane, and apparently, according to the FAA and the NTSB and others that have heard the tape, the passengers were really not clear what was going on up to that point, up to that phone call. And then after that, we don't know what happened. We do know that they eventually wound up flying into the World Trade Center. All right, let me tell you why George Bush is going to get reelected. Here it is. Are you ready for this? This is an exclusive, and you'll not hear this anywhere else. At the end of the summer, or in the early fall of this year, George Bush will set off on an official visit to Libya. He will walk down the ramp of Air Force One to be greeted by a lone figure resplendent in an azure silken robe shot through with gold thread. It will be Muammar Gaddafi. And he will be reveling in his new persona, Mr. Gaddafi will, as a reformed terrorist whose offer to scrap his country's weapons of mass destruction bought his country international acceptance. Their handshake will be living proof to a skeptical world that the Middle East revolution that Bush promised in mid-2002 before invading Iraq has taken off and is turning a profit negotiable in campaign coin. Iraq conquered, Saddam Hussein deposed and captured, and defying all expectations, Al-Qaeda prevented thus far from making good on all of its vows to repeat its 9/11 attacks in the United States, as well as in Europe and in the Middle East. This, of course, could change. There's no telling what Osama's up to, but up to this point, all of those vowed 9/11 type attacks have been thwarted. Iraq is under American occupation and control. Saddam Hussein is now sitting very comfortably in a cell someplace, probably sucking on his thumb by now. And Muammar Gaddafi, once one of the most hated enemies of the United States, who has vowed to get rid of his nuclear weapons program, will get a visit from the President of the United States of America. It could be as profound as Nixon's trip to China. Maybe not quite as big in terms of its global implication. Oh, well, I don't know. I mean, it's tough to say. It's a different world than it was 30 years ago. China was the big boy on the block, along with the Soviet Union that we wanted to woo. If you could split China and the Soviet Union, which they did, Russia at that point, the Soviet Union at that point, was a big horse's ass. The U.S. and China, baby, that's where it was at. They were going to go down into the sunset together. And, since then, of course, we've seen Nike and a whole bunch of jobs go to China. But what's that between friends? And the Soviet Union, one big fat schlub standing there sucking on a vodka bottle. Ruts a ruck, sucker. Well, now, this trip to Libya that Bush, my sources tell me, will take in the late summer or early fall is going to be huge. It's going to be big time. Libya at one time occupied what China at one time occupied in the minds of most Americans, a vile, reprehensible enemy that was to be feared if not destroyed. Or destroyed if not feared, one of the two. And now, of course, today we got people with tourists walking on the Great Wall of China. We got tourists sitting down and having Peking duck. We got tourists walking around, making goofy faces with the slant eye thing and, having themselves a ball. And what do you think is going to be happening in the next 10 years in Libya? You'll be walking around doing what? I don't know. What the hell do they have there? Walking around and taking a look at the oil rigs? There ain't no pyramids. I know that. Talk about that. I bet you they got some sweet beaches. This is going to be... The Democrats can't beat that. They can't defeat that. Now, I ain't saying that I'm glad the Democrats are going down to defeat. I would love it if they had somebody that was saying something. But up to this point right now, it ain't nothing. And this is going to be the nail in the coffin. If you think for one second the Democrats have got a shot, and Kerry, I will admit to you, he's impressive from the standpoint that he knows which way the wind blows, baby. I mean, he knows how to play this game to the T. But he ain't going to have a chance against this. Bush meeting with Muammar Gaddafi, Libya becoming an American ally. I mean, maybe even reopening the Wheeler Air Force Base that was in Libya in the late 50s, which they closed down when Gaddafi took over. We got an Air Force Base in Libya, which means we have a direct ability to attack Italy if we want to. I'm kidding. We have the direct ability to bomb Italy, bomb Rome if we need to. Because if the Pope and those priests get out of hand, what are we going to do? We got any more of these little kids getting touched, we can directly bomb the Vatican from Libya. It's going to be huge. The American people are going to look at that. And whether or not they believe that it is the fruition of a campaign promise, but they are going to look at that, and they're going to see that it's a very, very strong statement. It's huge. And it's never been done. Not since the Camp David Accords, when Egypt and Israel signed a peace agreement, have we been able to bring into the fold another, former enemy Arab state. Or at least a former recalcitrant and, stubborn Arab state. And... It's going to be big time. So what are the Democrats going to counter with? They're going to say that's wrong, it's bad, get back to domestic issues? Yeah, domestic issues are important, but the American people have been thinking about one thing and one thing only since 9/11, man, and that's how to take a walk down to the mall without having some Arab come up and shove a bomb up your thing. Who needs it? All right, stick around. John Kerry will be with us. He'll answer all of these questions. 1-800-449-8686. Later on, Larry Grover talking about how the Democrats need to just pull out of this race, and Margaret Gray on the just insane Patriot Act that forced her to close the curtain between first class and coach so some guy couldn't stare at her and size up how he was going to molest her on the gangway. 1-800-449-8686, Phil Hendry Show.
Phil Hendry Show, 1-800-449-8686. The Phil Hendry Show is back.
Let me, if you can hear me, on the line from New Hampshire right now is Senator John Kerry, and I know it's been an exciting night for you, Senator. Congratulations.
Thank you very much,
Senator. Tell me, winning the New Hampshire primary, a lot of people saying this is it. You are now the nominee.
Yeah, it looks that way, Phil. I don't see how anybody's going to. I think Dean pretty much. stuck his foot in it, as we all know, the way he acted the other night. I don't even think it was the way he acted. I think you've said it very well. He didn't have anything to say. But then you have to be very clear. I don't have anything to say either. But what I do have, and I think you said it very well, I have an inside-the-beltway savvy on how to manipulate and massage certain groups. I work with lobbyists long enough to know this, and so I am very careful with my image. And the American people vote image more than they do the real substantive issues. However, that having been said, you know and I know that I don't have any chance of being elected.
Well, now, that's what I think. You don't think you do either?
Oh, I'm not. Please. Did I hear you right? You said Bush is going to Libya?
Yeah.
Well, that's it. That's good, you know. I mean, I didn't have a chance before, but with Bush going to Libya, with the American people seeing him in all of his presidential regalia there in Libya, and plus, let's not forget he's negotiating peace in the Sudan. See, everybody around me is partying and drinking. This is, to me, it's one of the saddest moments of any campaign when you know that you don't have anything to say and you really don't have much, you know, you're not going to win, and everybody, they think that...
Well, in other words, you're saying all your campaign workers do feel you're going to win.
Exactly. You know, I'm going to tell them I'm not going to win. I'm just going to do what I can do.
Well, then why stay? If you know you're not going to win, why do you stay in the race?
I stay in the race, Phil. This is something you need to understand. I stay in the race because it's my shot. If I don't do it this year, I don't know how old I am, 56 or so. I'm not going to run at 60. If you take a look at me, I look like I'm ready to fall over. So I need to go now. And unfortunately, the year that I picked, I thought maybe we had something when the weapons of mass destruction were found. But when they got Hussein, that's all it took. So I'm dead meat. I am dead meat. And I'm angry at myself. I'm angry at my wife because she said, oh, yeah, you should run for president. It's always been your dream. And I'm thinking, you whore. I never...
Hold on, Senator. I want to ask you a question.
What?
Well, you said that you thought you had a shot until Saddam, but they still didn't find any weapons of mass destruction.
It doesn't make any difference. The American people don't care. They know that George Bush has taken a proactive step in the Middle East. He caught Saddam Hussein. People don't care if there's no weapons of mass destruction.
Well, but you seem to have said in the past that they do, and that's what's really fueling, along with that and other issues like health care, that's what's fueling your campaign.
Well, what's fueling my campaign are the, I don't know, whatever it is, maybe the 20% of the American electorate that supports me. And, you know, if you've ever been in a schoolyard fight, you're in the middle of the fight, you think everybody's standing around, you might as well be in Madison Square Garden, and if you take an aerial shot, it's probably only five guys, right? That's pretty much being in a John Kerry campaign. I think I'm standing in the middle of a coliseum filled with 100,000 people. Take a look around, and I got three guys, one of them's holding onto a broom, waiting for us to close up the restaurant. He couldn't care less whether I'm John Kerry or Daffy Duck. He just wants us out so he can start cleaning the puke up off the floor, which from the looks of it tonight... Yeah, that's great, John. That's enough. Somebody else threw up. There's going to be a lot. Now, I'm trying to tell you, and apparently, you know, you're with the media, so you're going to believe what you want.
Well, I don't think that's fair. I mean, I'm interviewing you.
Well, you don't think it's fair, but here's the thing. I'm trying to tell you this. I couldn't get elected to the Women's Republican Club of Westlake Village, you know, as an honorary transsexual. You see what I'm saying?
Well, it took a lot of imagination to come up with that one, and that you'd get my vote alone for that.
Well, I know what you've said about me, so don't lie to me, okay?
Well, I thought it was very creative.
I thought nobody's going to vote for me. Now, I got 36% in New Hampshire, which means it's going to you want me to give you the final tally?
On what? On
November?
Go ahead.
Bush will get 53% of the national vote. I will get 45 to 46, and that leaves, I don't know, 3% for about, you know, like you, what were you saying, Alfred E. Newman? You know, the jackasses that vote for that stuff.
So that's, and that is a landslide almost, isn't it?
It's not quite a landslide, but it's a significant turn back. And,
What? Okay, if I could ask you this, Senator Kerry.
Well, there's another one. Hold on for a minute, will you?
Well, what is going on?
Well, I got people throwing up. Hold on for a minute. Can I get your attention, please, ladies and gentlemen? Can you hang on, sir?
Go ahead. I got Senator John Kerry on the line from Massachusetts.
I'm not going to win jack squat. All right, cut. I want that bar closed. Get out. Everybody get out. Get out.
Where are you?
In my hotel room. Anyway, the things that I really would like...
Jesus, this sounds like a hell of a crowd.
It's a pretty good party. It's a pretty good party. But the thing that I want to say more than anything, Phil, is that I wanted to run for president. I had made a couple of runs in the 90s. Right when the momentum swung my way was a period of time when you couldn't beat George Bush if you were Jesus H. Christ crawled down off the cross in a brand new pair of floor shine shoes, okay? Covering up the holes and everything. So
you know, you're not going to get elected with making comments like that.
Why?
It's very religiously blasphemous.
Oh, come on. The only way I'm going to get noticed is if I say something original. I've got to say something that isn't just a playoff of what Bush says, and I got to be more than just anti-Iraq war.
By the way, where do you stand on that? Because I've heard you say, I like the Iraq war, or I've heard you...
What you heard me say was this, I'm against the Iraq war, but now that we're there, we got to do things differently.
Right.
Confusing enough?
Yeah, it very much is. So what do you, I mean, what is your stand?
I don't know what my stand is. It's anything, whichever, you know, what works. I mean, you know, the Democrats in New Hampshire, which, by the way, there's about six of them. Yeah. Whoopee-doo, I got 36% of six. Whatever works, Phil. I got to come up with something original. I don't know what it's going to be.
Well, you got to have a message, right?
Hey, hold on for a minute. Sweetheart, what is it? What's the senator got to do for a lap dance? Can you hold on, Phil?
Senator Kerry...
Can you hold on for a minute, please? I just won an election.
Yeah.
What do I got to do for a lap dance, huh?
$20.
Yeah, but you're Japanese, so that's... Do I get a discount because you're not white? Okay.
Well, it might remind you of Vietnam, sir.
What's that?
I said it might remind you of Vietnam.
You know, I heard that you said I was a war criminal the other day.
I made a mistake, sir.
Yeah, so just keep your zipper head jokes to yourself. What do I do for a lap dance? Let's go. Come on. Anyway, so what I'm...
Are you getting a lap dance, man? I'm trying... You know, what I want to do here...
Just let me... I can talk to you while I'm getting this. How much if I do that? Can I touch that? How much if I touch that? That's another 20? How much if I get that?
Can I just finish this up?
Go ahead.
So you got to come up with an original message. What do you think that is? You've said that you are in favor of veterans.
Yeah, well, that's the way every candidate talks when he wants to say he's for the military, but he's against the current military campaign, whatever it is. Always say you're in favor of veterans. It confuses the hell out of the voters. They think you're not such a bad guy. And also, I like to trot out my Vietnam experience because it makes it sound like I'm General John Pershing going up against the Maginot Line, right? I was some guy in a freaking patrol boat, okay?
But, sir, you were decorated?
You know what? First of all, to get a Purple Heart, you got to be dumb enough to get shot in the ass. That's number one. I got three of those, so I was dumb three times. And then to get the Bronze Star, yeah, I dragged some guy out of some mud or something. I forget. To tell you the truth, I was so stoned on weed.
Now, sir, you didn't smoke weed then, did you? You weren't high over there, were you?
No, but it's, you know, I wrote that as an episode for China Beach, which they... How much for... Okay, if I can touch your breast...
Can I just talk to you without you talking about the lap dance?
You just yelled at me?
Sir, I...
No, hold on. Did you yell... Everybody, quiet down! Did you yell at me? I'm a United States Senator... running for president, and I'm a Vietnam vet, and you yelled at me, nobody yelled at me, but anyway, Phil, I really feel that, get off of my lap, you freaking zipper, anyway,
sir, I gotta tell you, I want to wrap this up by saying, you're right,
no, I want a white one, give me a white one,
are you listening to me,
yeah, hold on, give me a white one, what do you want?
I want to say, sir, I just want to say that it sounds to me like you're throwing in the towel, that you do not have an original message. Why are so many people excited about your campaign?
Phil, again, it's not so many people. It's a handful of Democrats who are making a lot of noise, okay? They like to drink. They like to throw crap around. We got some chicks doing lap dances. I don't have any more 20s, so I got to go, but... I will say this. Let me see. It's written here somewhere. Oh, yeah. George Bush has run this country right into the ground, and the fiasco in Iraq will not stand. The American people are interested in other issues like health care. I can't read the rest of it, but thanks for having me. What is this again?
A radio show?
Okay, thank you.
Okay. Did we lose the connection, or did he just hang up? Senator John Kerry, on the Phil Hendry Show. Coming up, we'll have Larry Grover, who is a chairman of the Conservatives of Kern County, on how the Republicans should run unopposed this fall. And also we'll have Margaret Gray talking about a guy who was staring at her in the coat section. She was sitting in first class, and why don't they lock those curtains up, man? They don't because of the Patriot Act. And she was in danger of having her ass fondled. 1-800-449-8686. Phil Hendry Show.
Phil Hendry. 1-800-449-8686. The Phil Hendry Show is back.
Dean Wheeler on our show the other day. Dean is with the Northern California Human Rights something or other, some baloney. And he said that he wants Howard Dean elected president, even if he has to show photographs to middle and high school students, even if he has to show them photographs of an Iraqi baby blown to bits by George Bush. It actually isn't a photograph, though, of an Iraqi baby. It's just some hamburger meat that he threw on the sidewalk and took a picture of it. But he'll do anything to get Howard Dean elected.
Phil Hendry Show.
Comedy gold.
I was in the military for 30 years.
Okay.
George Bush did not do that. It might have been something because of the war, but he definitely didn't do it. So that is a lie right there. And the next place is, when you show this picture to these children, you're doing the same thing as being violating them with sexual or anything else. You should be put in prison because are violating the children.
Now, Roger, this is Phil Hendry. You're a veteran, sir, right?
Yes.
All right. Now, I got another veteran on the line, also a Korean War vet. Is this Lloyd?
Yes, sir.
Lloyd, meet Roger.
Yes, sir, Roger. How are you doing?
Well, I'm really upset. I've never called a talk program before.
Yeah, I listened to this guy, this joker they got on the radio right now, who keeps saying he's from San Francisco. And personally, I wouldn't go across the street to piss on the whole city myself. But
I'd like you to watch your language, too.
I'm very sorry, but what this man is saying, he's not showing a picture of an Iraqi baby. He said he took a picture of hamburger meat.
That's totally irrelevant. He's been saying it was a baby. How about the 2 million plus people at Saddam Hussein gassed to death and laying in the streets? Why don't you show pictures of that?
I agree with you. Let me tell you, I agree with you.
Yeah.
But this guy, and another thing.
Can I jump in, Phil?
Go ahead.
Saddam Hussein, yes, he gassed people. You're right. But we really forced him to do that. Because
who forced him to do it?
America did. We forced him into that.
You know,
he didn't want to do it. He didn't really want to do it.
But we were so insulting.
Look at what we did to Howard Dean. If Howard Dean gasses a number of people in Vermont, I won't be shocked.
That's the craziest bunch of garbage I've ever heard in my life. And
well, let's let Roger say something.
Is this the host?
I'm the host, yes, sir.
Okay, well, sir, I respectfully request
that
you quit. Take this guy is out of his mind. You cannot talk to him.
Absolutely. This man is, you know what I used to do with guys like you? I was in the United States Navy. We used to take you guys down in an alley and go through your pockets, take all the money, and leave you with no pants on. That's what we do with a guy like this.
You think so, huh?
Did you hear
what I said? I was in Vietnam, I was in Korea, and I was World War II, and I'm still alive. There's a lot of dead people behind me, buddy.
Who are you?
This is the Roger, the other veteran.
Oh, I thought it was the guy who had the pictures.
Thank you.
Phil, I want to say something. Saddam Hussein is a victim of the horrible propaganda machine, which is run by the warmonger Bush. You know that, Roger, and I know
he's not a warmonger.
Oh, what the hell kind of gobbledygook is that? You know, you sound like the kind of fruit that thinks Michael Jackson is all that and a bag of GD chips, don't you? Don't you?
No, I'm not going to be...
I'm sorry I got upset at you because you are really an asset to the Republicans, to George Bush, because everyone that hears you talking like this now, I would say I'd never vote for a Democrat as long as I live.
Hey, Roger, I don't want to interrupt you, but you know who's on the television? My wife's got the Fox News. I don't know if you ever see the Fox deal.
Yeah, I've seen it.
Okay, they got that Tammy Faye Baker. Now, let me ask you a question.
What?
Is that a piece of ass or what?
You just should apologize, sir. There's millions of people
listening.
There's
a lot of women listening, yeah.
Well, I'm terribly sorry, but I've gotten to the point in my life where I just don't give a sweet Christ any longer, you know?
No, but I do.
Yeah, but this gentleman, Roger, is a gentleman, and he doesn't want to hear that, okay?
No, I do. I care about this country.
Also, I think it's a horrible way to speak about one of our female of the species. Women are just like men, except they have to squat and, you know, do those things.
Can I talk to the host again for a second?
Yeah, I'm right here, sir.
Well, in the meantime, you know what I should talk.
Okay, what do you want to talk about?
Okay, is the host on now?
Yes, I'm right here, sir. Go ahead.
Okay.
Go ahead,
sir. What I want to say is,
a guy like you ought to be taken out and shot. Well, yeah. You don't understand what it is.
Go ahead. Are they talking? They're talking in the background.
Anyhow, I want to.
Could you two guys not talk in the background?
Who? Me?
Are you talking to me?
Yes.
The host there?
I'm right here, Roger. Go ahead.
Okay. What I would say is, the more I hear this, the more thankful I am for him, because anyone that hears him that would vote for a Democrat has got to be out of their mind. This guy is—he shouldn't be allowed loose on the streets. Forgive me, sir.
Because I've always enjoyed sex.
Bill Hendry Show.
Comedy gold.
There's Lloyd and there is Dean Wheeler. That's from our show, I believe, on Thursday. Dean came on and said, those Iraqi babies, man, Bush is killing them all. Here's the story I was referring to. You're going to find this interesting. Of course, a lot of people say, well, it's the Justice Department. Of course, they're lying. But anyway, the Justice Department has found no incidents in which the Anti-Terrorism Patriot Act has been invoked to abuse civil rights or civil liberties. But they have identified instances of mistreatment of Muslims and Arabs that did not involve the act. Tuesday's report probably will provide fodder for Bush, blah, blah, blah. The law was passed after 9/11, blah, blah. It's clear the government's been responsible, blah, blah. Representative John Conyers of Michigan said, whose district includes many Americans of Arab descent, said the report failed to identify a single punishment or sanction imposed on a Justice Department employee found to have violated civil rights and civil liberties. He said that Ashcroft needs to get the War Department or the Department of Justice House in order. However, the new report by Glenn Fine, a Justice Department Inspector General, found that 1,266 civil rights and civil liberties complaints were received between June 15th and December 15th, 2003, but of those, only 17 involved justice employees and merited a full investigation, and most allegations of excessive force were involving Bureau of Prisons facilities. The report found no civil rights or civil liberties abuses specifically related to the Patriot Act. So I know what you're going to say, a lot of you guys out there. It must be bullcrap, right? Well, if you can read, read it.
Now, Phil Hendry, 1-800-449-8686.
Larry Grover joins us from Conservatives of Kern County. And Larry, tell me, as a Republican, how you view the New Hampshire Democratic primary.
A race for a variety of reasons. First off, we need to state the obvious. While the Democrats are having their primary in New Hampshire, I don't think there's, as you know, there's no way the Democrats, I think American people know, there's no way the Democrats are going to win this fall. I've been watching this comedy unfolding in New Hampshire with each passing week, and what we're asking the Democrats, Phil, for the safety of the country is to give this up.
All right, now when you say for the safety of this country, you believe what you mentioned in the material we read. The president needs to run unopposed to give it up. Now, how do we seriously take...
Well, Phil, I realize it's very unusual, and I'm not here to tell you in a frivolous way that we should just have a one-man race, and it's, if you will, a referendum or a plebiscite. What I am saying, though, Phil, is this. The Democrats have no hope of winning. The American people are screaming at that handful of Democrats who think they can beat George Bush to really basically just, vacate the field. I mean, we don't want to send a message to the French, to the Iranians, to the Germans, or to whoever that it's open season. So if you pray for this country every night, you pray for George Bush to win. If, however, you want the French and the Iranians to have a pass into this, everyone knows this, and I think I'm stating the upside.
Well, I don't think everybody knows this. You're saying that if a Democrat wins, we're giving the country away?
I think, Phil, believe me, I'm out there, and I talk to people. Not only should the president run unopposed, but it would be better for the Democrats if he did, because it would save them from a defeat in November.
How do you figure that?
Humiliating defeat. And number two, for the first time in the history of our country, we'd have a president run unopposed, and we'd send a clear message to friend and foe alike that this country stands united. Now, am I aware of how unusual this request is? Of course I am. Is it going to happen? Probably not. But I want to make the statement that it's better for our country for the Democrats to quit this fool's errand of trying to beat George Bush in November, because that's exactly what it is, a fool's errand, and drop out of this race. Let this be a plebiscite on the president. I'm sure he would. It would be a unanimous, almost unanimous endorsement, and let's move on protecting this country.
You made a reference, our enemies want the Democrats to win, is basically what you're saying.
Oh, I believe not just any Democrats, but I think the people who have opposed the United States, the French, the Germans, the Iranians, whoever, I think they love this current crop of Democrats. Specifically, if you live in Iran right now, or you are in a cave in Tora Bora, John Kerry is a dream come true. Howard Dean is a dream come true.
You know that when you say these things, I realize you're engaging in some hyperbole, but it almost sounds as if you're calling these guys traitors.
No, they're not. They're not traitors. No, Phil.
Well, that's when you say that in Tora Bora they're dancing in their caves because of John Kerry.
No, I'm just saying they would love to have these guys. George Bush has been the worst nightmare of the Al-Qaeda and the Iraqis and the terrorists in general. Why would they still want to deal with him when they can deal with a I'm sure he's a nice man, but Howard Dean is just, you know, he's a little soft, and this guy Kerry is bending over backwards and apologizing for ever putting on the uniform of a United States serviceman, and Clark, you know, I don't know, they say he was a general, but I think with those guys in the White House, it's back to business as usual. You'll see an embassy bombed here, some car bombs in the World Trade Center garage there, another ship gets a hole blasted in it. And you, Democrat, and the Democratic president, what does he do? He decides to drop a cruise missile on an empty grain silo.
All right. Let me give our number out. 1-800-449-8686. Larry Grover, who joins us periodically to talk about politics, talking about it from specifically a Republican side. Now, you say the Democrats should drop out of the race and let Bush run unopposed so the American people can show we have a united front against terrorism, right?
Exactly, Phil.
But you also realize that that's not going to happen.
Oh, I know it's not going to happen. But as I said, I want to go out there and say it. And the reason why I'm saying it, the obvious reason, is because the Democrats have no chance of winning in November. Everyone knows that. But more importantly, when the Democrats run against George Bush in November, they'll lose. They'll be humiliated in their loss because everything they thought was true about the American people supporting them, they'll find out that the American people have a great, they are anathema to the American people. And if I am permitted, the American people hate them. They hate their living guts. They hate what they stand for. They hate...
Well, hold on. But the point of what you've written is it isn't going to happen because the Democrats can't possibly win because the American people are with George Bush.
It's a combination of the American people being with George Bush and the current crop of Democratic candidates being so laughably bizarre it makes you want to get sick all over the floor, and the Democrats can't see it. I mean, in the cafes of Europe, they're laughing. In the bazaars of the Middle East, they're laughing. People are howling that the Democrats think they're going to win this race, and they're not going to.
Talking with Larry Grover, our number 1-800-449-8686, and he's talking about George Bush running unopposed, the first American president ever to run unopposed in history. Because there's no way they can win, and the upside is...
The upside, Phil, the Democrats would be doing a very patriotic thing. They would be allowing the world to see this as a united front.
Can you tell me, there is a slogan that you've got, let's wait till 2008. It says, we don't need 3,000 more, let's wait till 2008. What's that about?
Well, that is a slogan that I feel, frankly, the Democrats could use as they withdraw from this race.
And the slogan means what?
It means... You put a Democrat in the White House, and you're going to see 3,000 more Americans get carved up in some kind of a bombing.
And see, that's the kind of hype. That's what I'm talking about right there.
About what?
This is the kind of, it's almost a slanderous thing to say.
It's not a slanderous thing, Phil. When Bill Clinton was the president of the United States, we had the coal bombing, the World Trade Center garage bombing, we had the embassy bombing. This isn't a new thing. George Bush is the first guy to do anything about it. The Democrats know that they're not going to do anything about it. So why not gracefully step aside as a patriotic party and let 3,000 Americans live at least for another 4 years? And
so it is absolutely assured that 3,000 Americans will die in a terrorist bombing if a Democrat gets into the White House.
Again, we've never had a president run for re-election uncontested. I think if ever you were going to do it, this is it. This is the time.
All right, now, I know you are working on an incentive program, and I want to find out a little bit more about what that is. Because what you want to do, you're not going to get the Democrats not to run in 2004.
Absolutely. But we are working on an incentive program, Phil, with Patricia Neaton. She's an aide to Greg Simone, who's our congressional rep here in the South Bay. The proposal basically is this. If Democrats refrain from this run at the White House during a period in our history, then we can up the food stamp allocation. A lot of Democrats, I'm not saying all Democrats are on food stamps, but a lot of them are. And so you can up the food stamp allocation to a lot of these people and bonus their welfare checks or whatever.
So in other words, all Democrats are on...
No, sir, I said that they are.
Well, the only incentive you're offering is food stamp allocation.
No, for working Democrats, you could also have tax credits. But we want to address that area of the Democratic Party, which, you know, I don't want to...
Well, go ahead and say it. Democrats are on food stamps.
There's a lot of Democrats that are on food... What we want to do is say this. To those Democrats that are on food stamps, we'll give you more food stamps. So if you encourage your elected representatives not to, you know, the presidential nominees not to run,
they'll get more food stamps.
Mr. Henry, I can hear you think that...
Because you think the Democrats are on welfare...
No, I'm just... You know a lot of those people are on food stamps, is all I'm saying.
All right, 1-800-449-8686. Richard, go ahead. You're on the Phil Henry Show.
Who, me?
Yes, sir. Go ahead.
Look here. That's what this guy is talking about is the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard in my life. The Democrats or any other party should give up. Just send a message to the other side that we are united. A lot of things I don't agree that Bush has done, and why should I...
Well, wait a minute. The Democrats, you elect a Democrat, and you're killing 3,000 more Americans.
Well, look, Americans are being killed every day now for being over there for a reason that we find out now, according to what Kay said, that Bush lied about.
3,000 of them.
They're getting killed every day, getting knocked off every day. If it goes to present rate, it might get up to that point.
Two guys a day, they're soldiers. They're supposed to get shot. I'm talking about...
Well, that sounds insensitive.
They're supposed to get shot.
Well,
they're soldiers supposed to do the shooting, man, not get shot.
You think they get to sit up
and get shot?
Wait a minute. You don't think it's going to get better under this guy, Kerry, who's so ashamed of wearing a uniform? He looks like he's going to wet himself every time he talks about Vietnam.
He was shamed for wearing a uniform in Vietnam because, in fact, McNamara even said a few years later it was no way they could win the war, and they kept sending boys over there to die, 50,000 of them. I would be ashamed myself, wouldn't you?
Well, not at all. I think that what we did in Vietnam was noble.
To you and send you over there, they lied to you, they know they can't win, and keep sending people over there to die. You're saying you wouldn't
think
it's
going to be good,
sir?
What do you think the Democrats... You don't think Kerry's going to pull the troops out of Iraq, do you? He's going to keep them there. Because Kerry's got the bloodlust. He's had the taste of blood. He likes it. And
wait a minute. Answer the man's question.
What was his question?
You heard it. The question was, when you said about the fact that you would be ashamed, Craig Kerry was ashamed of his government, I asked, wouldn't you be ashamed of a government that knows they cannot win a war but keeps sending boys over there to die? Wouldn't you be ashamed of that government as well?
Where's that?
Here, when McNamara and Johnson kept...
He's talking about Vietnam.
Over.
Oh, Vietnam. We could have won Vietnam if we had used the nuclear option. And we didn't use the nuclear option.
Knew we couldn't win it, and he kept sitting the balls over there.
We could win
wouldn't
it.
You be ashamed of your government also?
No, I wouldn't, because I would use the nuclear option, and I would...
You drop an atomic bomb in Vietnam.
And we had the option, and we could have nuked... Oh, man. I guess you don't want to hear me say it, but you got a bunch of guys that are eating rice and wearing straw hats. You drop an atomic bomb on that, and there is nothing left but a seaweed roll. Now, that's the God's honest truth. How do I know? Because I have seen countless... Let me ask, hey, did you see Apocalypse Now?
Let me ask the host a question.
All right,
this is my first time. Listen,
yes, sir, go ahead.
This guy that you were talking to, does he legitimately believe what he's saying, or is this a
I'd like to know, Larry, are you honestly... I asked you, you don't really think you can get the Democrats not to run.
I told you I don't really think it's going to happen, but I think somebody needs to say it. Someone needs to say the Democrats are going to get their asses kicked in November, and for what? When they can not run and show a united front to these
Let me say one thing and tell you this. What you're saying is the very same thing that somebody else said when George Bush won, got ready to run again. They said that he could not win, and Clinton beat him.
Let me tell you this. If John Kerry wins, you're going to have a whole bunch of Iranians. They may, for the first time in their lives, get into a hot tub with a bunch of chicks and drink champagne. They'll love it. And you'll have a lot of Iraqis drawing mouse ears on John Kerry's picture and laughing like until they're sick, until they're pitching up pickled lime and goat meat.
You
so
probably
my friend,
what? You probably said the same. Clinton won.
Well, I can't understand. Your accent's a little thick. But it's been a pleasure talking with you.
Richard, hold on. This is Phil Hendry. Thank you for calling, sir. We've got to take a break.
Okay.
You know, the man called...
Mr. Hendry, I have to ask you, was that a joke call or was that for real?
That was a real caller.
Well, shut my mouth. You know, because he just...
He was a caller from Tennessee, sir, where there is a pronounced Southern accent, and I'm sure to us, to them, we have an accent. You understand?
Well, I don't see how that's possible. I think a lot of it...
Hold on for a minute. All right, with me here is... The question is, why are the Democrats running against George Bush when they know they can't win? Wouldn't it be better if they, for the first time in history, bowed out of the presidential race, let George Bush run unopposed, and show that the American people are united? Now... My guest is Larry Grover. He doesn't really believe it's going to happen, but he feels by at least putting the idea out there, he is planting the thought. But one of the things that he's got going here is, and I told him I didn't think it was a good slogan. It's a rather offensive slogan that he thinks the Democrats should use. Let's wait. It says, we don't need 3,000 more. Let's wait till 2008. The implication is, vote for a Democrat and 3,000 more Americans will die in a terrorist attack. Do you think that is likely? 1-800-449-8686. 1-800-449-8686. Phil Hendry Show.
The Phil Hendry Show. 1-800-449-8686. Building sandcastles in your mind. The Phil Hendry Show is back.
Talking with Larry Grover from Conservatives of Kern County on why Democrats should just not run for, just give up the race because they're going to lose and they're going to lose big. And why show a divided front to our enemies when you can show a united front? I have a young man on the line here, Larry, who's got some information for you.
Good. If I could say something before we go to that call, Phil.
Go ahead.
I think it's fairly obvious the Democrats don't want to win. That's why they have this crop of literally imbeciles that are rather purposely sabotaging their bid for the president because they're afraid to take over. I don't know if they even know what to do if they get in. What is their policy on Iraq? They've not articulated it. And I think it's very sad in a country. I love this country very much. You know where I am? I'll tell you where I am tonight. I'm at a bingo game. I brought my mother over to the local church for a bingo. I don't have a date. I haven't really had a social life because I've devoted myself to my country. And I got you. You're giving me phone calls of people that are arguing with me.
But that's the process. That's the democratic process. And you said you don't even think you've got a chance, but you wanted to put the idea out there. But anyway, this is Joe.
Yes.
Now, you have a Newsweek poll from last week, right?
I think it was released yesterday, but Newsweek, which is obviously a national magazine, shows that John Kerry is currently leading President Bush in a national poll by 2 percentage points, which seems to conflict with your guest is suggesting is Democrats having no chance of okay. being elected president.
All right, what's your comment on that, Larry?
Well, Joe, you sound like a nice young man. Let me tell you, I've been in politics a long time. There's a Newsweek poll in actually March of 2000 that shows Al Gore leading George Bush. Well, hold on for a minute. He didn't beat him by 5 percentage points, which I'm looking at right now. And he certainly, you know, so in other words, polls this early in the race are ridiculous.
Well,
they don't mean anything. Howard Dean was leading in the polls until all of a sudden he ran into a little roadside explosion called the Iowa caucuses and the New Hampshire deal.
Well, I might agree with you that polls don't necessarily count at this point, but you're suggesting that you somehow have some information which suggests the Democrat can't be viable.
What I'm suggesting
to you is that's contrary to the evidence that people can find in national polling that's going on right now. That's clearly not the case.
No, the fact is that in March of 2000, I told you, you had Al Gore leading George Bush by 6 percentage points. All right, so, you know, and it wasn't any kind of a landslide for Al Gore, nor for George Bush. This early in the race, let me tell you something. Can I ask you a question?
Go ahead.
Do you go to high school, or what do you do?
No, I'm actually out of high school.
All right. Do you have a wife or a girlfriend?
Yes.
Okay, I don't. And the reason
why... And your point would be?
Huh?
And your point is?
My point is that I have given my life to my country. I'm at a bingo tournament with my mother tonight. I'm not out bird dog and chicks and, and banging...
All right, sir. I understand you're not out bird dog and chicks. What you are doing, though, is talking with us. That guy had a good point.
But I brought up a better point. I said, if anybody's listening, Al Gore led George...
I know, George Bush by 6 percentage points in March of 2000. All right, hold the line. 1-800-449-8686. We are talking with Larry...
Jesus, it's
crazy. Hold on for a minute. Larry Grover about his feeling that the Democrats have no hope, so they should drop out of the race, let George Bush run unopposed, present a united front to our enemies, and not become a laughingstock to the world. He also said something I think very inflammatory. He says the best thing that our enemies are hoping for a Democratic win in November. The enemies of America are hoping for that. 1-800-449-8686, Phil Hendry Show.
The Phil Hendry Show, 1-800-449-8686. Shock and awe meets your radio dial.
The Phil Hendry Show is back. 1-800-449-8686.
Larry Grover from Conservatives of Kern County on with us. You know, the idea that the Democrats not even run for president is crazy. You know it.
I don't think it's crazy. I'm not saying that it's going to happen, but I think, Phil, the Democrats, as I've said, have got no prayer of winning. I've proven it time and again here on your program. I think the sad reality is that, you know, George Bush could be caught having sex, and I say this with great respect for the president, but he could be caught having sex with one of the White House maids. And please understand, you know, what it is I'm saying. George Bush could be caught having sex with one of the domestics at the White House, and he'd still be elected president. That's how frightened the American people are of having a Democrat become president and turn this country over to Osama bin Laden as some kind of a toy that he can experiment on by flying airplanes into this building or that.
You know, Larry, you sound paranoid, man.
Well, paranoid, huh? A little something happened, and maybe you read about it in the newspapers. It was on all the news programs and the news magazines. A thing called 9/11. You heard about that, didn't you?
I heard about 9/11, yeah. But to say that the Osama bin Laden is going to be turned over to the Democrats, or turned over by the Democrats as America, as a toy.
All we need is Osama bin Laden playing hacky sack with America, and my friend, you can kiss your rear end and mine goodbye.
All right, 1-800-449-8686. This is Ty. Go ahead, Ty.
Hey, how you doing?
Good.
What does it matter if it's a Democratic or a Republican in office, okay? Osama bin Laden attacked the U.S. of A. with a Republican in office, did he or did he not?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear. I'm in a bingo game with my mother. What did you say?
George Bush in office right now. George Bush is the one that sent our American people over to those foreign countries to get killed. Right or wrong?
No, wrong. He sent them over to those foreign countries to defend this country against terrorists.
Yes.
Yeah. So you were wrong. So you were wrong. He didn't send them over to get killed.
Do you honestly think that a Democratic president would not do the same? Do you honestly think what happened when Bill Clinton was in office? We didn't have any.
He didn't do it. Yes, we did. We had the World Trade Center garage bombing. We had Nicole was bombed, and we had two embassies bombed in Iraq Africa. Where were you? Were you reading newspapers back then? Or are you like Osama bin Laden? You wanted to play hacky sack with
hacky sack. Will you stop with the hacky sack?
Well, he's talking about Clinton. Jesus, they blew up a freaking garage in New York. They killed people on the coal, or maybe they don't count because they're
soldiers.
I can't
even make my point.
What's your point?
My point is, it doesn't matter. People are going to die regardless of whoever's in office. It does not matter if it's a Democrat or if it's a Republican.
Are you Chinese?
Excuse me?
Are you Chinese?
Why would you ask me a question like that?
Well, I just want to know, are you or are you not a Chinaman?
I am not a Chinaman.
All right. Therefore, as an American, you would know that we have soldiers in uniform who are ready to go fight and die for this country, if necessary, in defense of this country.
Yes, I believe. Yes.
All right.
Yes.
Now,
are you one of them?
Eh?
Are you one of them? You're talking
one of what?
One of the soldiers you're talking about.
No.
You're over here speaking about, oh, you love your country.
Yes.
I do too. You love your country.
Yes, sir.
You die for your country, but yet you're out drinking beers and playing bingo with your mother.
Yes, sir. I'm playing bingo.
Besides running your mouth. What are you doing?
I'm telling you that George Bush should run unopposed so that we don't have
unopposed
1 billion Chinese thinking that we're weak because we got these Democrats. I want to present a united front to the Chinese.
Osama bin Laden honestly thinks George Bush and George Bush Jr. are weak for the simple fact that he attacked.
How can he think they're weak when we bombed his ass out of Tora Bora? He had to go running off into the arms of a Paki, into the arms of his Paki lover.
Will you let this man talk, please?
He thinks that George Bush was weak because he attacked the U.S. of A. when George Bush was in office. Not when Bill Clinton was in office.
He attacked the USA when Bill Clinton was in office. In the World Trade Center bombing in 92, it was Osama bin Laden. What, are you a Chinaman?
You already asked him that, if he was a Chinaman. All right, Ty, thank you.
Jesus, H. You know, the good, sweet Lord Jesus could unplug himself from that cross, slither on down like he's going down a barber pole, put on himself a business suit, enter the 21st century, go to that guy's house, sit out and calmly have a cup of coffee and explain life to him, and he still wouldn't get it. That's what bothers me about the American electorate today. And what is me having playing bingo with my wife or with my mother got to do with Jack Squat?
It doesn't have anything to do with it. It's a nice thing that you're playing bingo with your mother. But I heard you belch into the phone.
Forgive me for that.
And are you drinking?
Well, let me ask you something, Mr. Henry. When is having a Heineken all of a sudden a provision of the Nuremberg War Crimes Tribunal?
I didn't say that, man. I'm asking you.
No, give me. When, and actually, it wasn't a Heineken. It was a St. Pauli's girl, just so you know that I don't have my nose up in the air. I drink regular, run-of-the-mill, you know, pretend good beer.
Pretend good beer.
Yes, sir.
Here is Nicholas. Go ahead, Nicholas.
Hi, how are you?
Yes, sir, fine.
Yes. Your name, Roger?
No, sir. My name is Larry Grover. I'm with Conservatives.
Larry, I'm sorry. I have a bad memory sometimes. The process you speak of, this electoral process, is identical to that of what happened in Iraq shortly before the war, if you remember. Saddam Hussein running unopposed, and every single Iraqi citizen supposedly voted him in.
Well, wait a minute. I'm not saying we should violently endorse this. I'm requesting that we do it one time so that we can present a united front to our enemies. And I'm not forcing anybody to do it.
It's a dictatorship that you're asking for.
Look, Nicholas, I don't know whether you're aware,
The Democrats, I'm telling you very seriously, and I mean this with those two little boys that drowned in that lake by Susan Smith, they've got more of a chance of coming back to life than the Democrats do of...
Now, wait just a minute.
What?
How dare you?
How dare? What?
What?
He's bringing up the death of two little boys that were drowned in a lake by their mother.
I don't mean any disrespect.
How dare you bring that up as any kind of an example of anything?
That's horrible, man.
I'm just saying they've got more of a chance of coming back to life than John Kerry does of even sniffing the carpet in the White House.
I can't believe
an ignorant
American like yourself thinks you know what's best.
Sir, can I have another St. Pauli girl? Sir, I will tell you that I love my country more dearly than any woman I've ever made love to.
I imagine you would.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It must be love your country more than your right hand.
You know, must be funny to a guy like you, huh, who probably... Where do you live? You live in America?
I'm afraid not.
Where do you live, sir?
I live right next door.
Mexico?
Right,
Mexico?
Canada.
Oh, well, no wonder you people have no patriotism up there. Canada?
Canada, that's correct.
I could have sworn you were Mexican.
Well, you...
All right, okay, look.
No, but your Canadians, they don't have a country up there. They got a collection of, you know, just people, you know, they kiss the Queen's ass.
Hey, I was in JTF in Yugoslavia, and we had to rescue a pack of Navy SEALs when they were PO'd.
You were what? You were what?
I was in JTF. And what? We had to rescue a pack of Navy SEALs when they were PO'd. So you have some answering to do yourself. When you're out there drinking and you think you know what's best, you think you want to have a
you rescued some Navy SEALs when
dictatorship.
You rescued some Navy SEALs when they were PO'd.
POW, yes. They were held hostage.
And you were with the Canadian Coast Guard? What were you with?
The JTF.
Well, what's that?
Spetsnaz, Joint Task Force.
Look, while Osama bin Laden has his robe hiked over his hip playing hacky sack with a country that I love so very deeply, you're laughing.
All right.
He has no robe over his shoulder.
Bingo. I just went again. What?
Get out of here. You're giving me a freaking pain. Anyway, Nicholas, thank you for your brave service.
Anytime.
To the United Nations.
Well, I'm since retired.
Yes, sir. You're retired? How old are you?
28.
Oh, you're retired from what?
I'm retired from the Canadian Forces.
Oh, okay. But so you're just like hanging and banging, as we say, right?
More or less.
Cool. Thanks for calling.
Anytime.
Bye-bye. So he was with Canada. They rescued some Navy SEALs over there in Slovak Town. Dig that, baby. 1-800-449-8686. Bin Laden playing hacky sack. What a turd that guy is. If that Grover ever comes on the show again, oh, he's booked for next week? Great. I will really be angry that they've got more of a chance of coming back to life than Kerry does of sniffing the carpeting in the White House. 1-800-449-8686, world famous Phil Henry Show.
The Phil Henry Show, 1-800-449-8686, the epitome of radio. Phil Henry Show is back. 1-800-449-8686.
We had Chris Norton on our show yesterday, a young man who is an aspiring film director. Anyway, he says that women have been abused because when they have sex on videotape with their boyfriends, it usually winds up on the internet, and they usually wind up looking hanky and fat and ugly. He will come over and videotape you having sex with your boyfriend, and he'll do the lighting and makeup personally. Sounds nuts, doesn't it? Let's listen to Chris.
Phil Henry Show.
Comedy gold.
I just want to say that you are the worst misogynist I've ever heard on the radio. You contradict yourself.
I don't know what the word means.
It means a woman hater.
A woman hater.
Yes. My mother died of breast cancer. Why would I hate women?
I am sorry that your mother died of breast cancer.
Oh, you said you didn't care.
I don't care about
my
somebody's...
dying of
Let
breast cancer.
Let me say what I have to say, sir.
Well, have you ever had breast cancer?
Excuse me. What I have to
no,
say
you haven't.
Is that you are absolutely, you've already admittedly been a sleaze with your girlfriends and videotaped them without their consent.
Well,
why should anyone,
not all of them.
Anyone, it doesn't matter. If you've done it to one person, it's enough.
What about the ones that said yes?
Excuse me, but I don't care about what somebody has consented to. But you are a predator who has already admittedly preyed on women. And I think that it is so offensive for you to go around. I feel sorry for your mother in her grave that you're going around parading around about breast cancer as if it was some sort of badge of honor for your sickness.
Mr. Norton, go ahead. Kathy, let me get him to respond. What about that, Chris, using this breast cancer argument to say you understand women?
First of all, if this, I'd almost be tempted to believe this is a man doing a woman's voice on the phone.
Yeah,
because
you're
talking just like a man does, yeah.
Well, you know, that's
how
you deal with women who would stick up for themselves. That's why you think women need to be protected by you.
Okay, ma'am, right now on the Internet are billions and billions of hours of women having sex with different guys, and they thought that it was not going to be on the Internet.
And you would know. You probably put stuff up there yourself.
Okay, well,
you're one of the consumers of that smut, and you're one of now the trying to purportedly trump other people.
Well,
come on, you're
ma'am, if you've had a boyfriend, chances are you're hanky butts on the Internet, too. So, you know.
All right, let's not get personal, okay?
Well, she got personal with me.
I'm not on the Internet. I have never been.
How do you know that? How do you? Well, maybe because nobody.
Because I am in committed relationship.
Yeah, with a guy who tapes you secretly with a camera in a drawer.
We don't even have a video cassette player. I don't have anything else to say to you.
Well, maybe he does. Maybe you don't, but he does.
Mr. Henry, thank you.
All right, thank you very much.
Phil Henry Show. Comedy Gold.
Well, Chris, good luck, man. Cadillac has a new truck coming out. Hi, this is the Phil Henry Show, and I just thought I'd let all of my upper middle-class listeners know that Cadillac has a truck coming out. Cadillac. Yeah, we sure are concerned about oil and alternative energy in this country, aren't we? Yeah. Yeah, that George Bush, man. That cat and his association with that Saudi oil family, that's really suspicious. By the way, let's go out and price the new Caddy truck, shall we? American people, you know something what really is kind of sad? In this country, politics is a game. It's just a game. And we're all responsible for this. Not the elected officials. Yeah, I know, it would be easy, and it's tempting to blame them for everything that happens. Everything. You had a loose bowel movement this morning? Must have been Bush's fault. You're fat? Must have been Bush's fault. You're a drug addict? Gotta be Bush's fault. You're poor? Bush's fault. You're rich? Bush's fault. It's all Bush's fault. You know, in this country, politics is this little game that we play, and it's fun, and we make fun of these people who serve in office. I mean, God forbid we should ever consider them patriots because they actually give their lives to public service. No, what we do is we cynically say, well, they're there to get rich. Like none of us are trying to get rich. Well, they're getting rich off the public dime. Really? You living in such a terrible freaking place? You know, in some countries, let me tell you, you may not know this, in some countries, if you cast a ballot, you're murdered. You're murdered. They come to your house, they beat you up, or you're thrown in prison if you, you know, if you advocate for a democratic system. That's just in some countries. But here in America, we're so used to it and so comfortable with it that we mock it, and we play games with it, and we don't educate ourselves, and we just assume a man is evil because he does something we disagree with, and we make funny jokes about it, and we make our little Hitler tapes, and we just sort of, and we say that we don't want to be in the Middle East, we don't want a war for oil, but by God, we're selling those SUVs like you wouldn't believe it. Well, if you don't want a war for oil, what are you doing driving around that freaking excursion for? Or that explorer? Or that expedition? Or that esplanade? Or the escalade? Or the whatever the hell they're calling them. They're running out of names for these things, man. You can't call them cougar. Remember they were all called cats? Cougar, jaguar, tabby. I'm going to come out with a sports car called the tabby. How about the calico? There's a cat. See, any guy that any cat that claims he can read the American people, he must be a mind reader, man. He must be Swami the Great. He must be one of them cats with the turban wrapped and the snake coming out of a basket or something. Because how do you read people like the American people, who on the one hand say, no war for oil. On the other hand, say, how much for, you know, like the Hummer? The Hummer? You people driving that thing, you got to be kidding. You got to be kidding with that. I mean, that's the biggest freaking joke rolling around on the highways today. Just exactly what is it that you think you're driving anyway? You think people think you're a badass driving that thing? What kind of gas mileage does that get? Yeah, I know. I bet you, comparatively speaking, it's really great. What, you get 15 in the city? Hey, man, it's a gas mileage. I get like 8 in the city. I get, you know, 12 on the open highway. Great. So that's where we are today, man. I mean, you know, and if you think that that stuff comes just because the freaking tooth fairy brought it, if you think Santa Claus, forget it, man. It comes from the Middle East. And the Middle East don't like us these days. We're in a contentious struggle with towel wrappers and Muslim clerics and scumbags of every stripe who don't want us over there, okay? They don't want us there. They hate our living guts. Now, this guy Qaddafi, apparently, he's ready to play ball. They want to blow us right out of the... You want to know why the World Trade Center happened? They didn't want us in Saudi Arabia. Why were we there? To vacate Kuwait, apparently. Or was it a war for oil? Well, who cares? Like I said, let's go price that Cadillac. Excrement. I'm sorry. Esplanade. I'm sorry. Escalade.
Phil Hendry. 1-800-449-8...
...1-800-449-8686. And now more on The Phil Hendry Show.
The other side of the debate over George Bush and John Kerry, just the political landscape, Margaret Gray joins us from the newsroom, actually over there at the Seneca, where you're working on your column for tomorrow, right, Margaret?
Yes, so part of it is going to be about the Sundance Film Festival that Frank and I just returned from. Most of it's going to be about this so-called war on terror that has been waged by George Bush. I have first-hand experience at the kind of megalomania and paranoia that drives this, and I want to write about that. I'm just really, literally hours from the experience itself, and I want to get it on paper because it's fresh in my memory.
Well, was this while you were flying home?
Yes, Phil, Frank and I were flying back from Sundance. Frank is my husband and, I guess you could say, my partner in crime in a lot of the things we've written about and the travels we've had over the last 30 years. I am constantly working. Frank likes to sleep on the plane. We have flown first class since Frank and I got married, because Frank always used to say, you know, why fly coach when you can fly first class? Since George Bush began his so-called war on terror, there has been a rule instituted that the curtain between first class and coach not be closed, but kept open for security reasons.
All right, and for a lot of our listeners, that curtain is the one that you see sitting back there in coach, you know, that kind of separates you. Used to be closed, but it isn't anymore.
That is correct. We were in the last row of first class, and a man sitting in coach behind us was staring at me. You know the feeling you get and that someone is staring?
You almost feel their eyes burning into you.
Yeah, and I turned around, and sure enough, there he was staring at me. We got our dinner, and I turned as if to adjust my pillow, and he was staring and smiling. I asked the flight attendant that there was one of the coach people staring at me. I sit in first class for a reason, for privacy, to work, and to be with people who are of a like mind, if you will. I asked the flight attendant, would she close the curtains? She said no, she couldn't, because of the new FAA regulations, read George Bush's war on terror. And that required her to keep it open. I said to her, I want the curtain closed. Now, she's a flight attendant making, what, $30,000 a year? So she can serve bad coffee and pretend she knows what to do if the plane is in a nosedive and we're all threatened with being burned alive. And so I said to her, close the curtain, and she again said she would not. I reiterated that a man in coach was staring at me. the curtain's there for a reason. I said close it, and I did use an unfortunate word.
All right, now that's when the police were called when the plane... What did you call her?
I called her the C-word. I was being stared at. It felt to me like he was sizing me up for some kind of a molestation. Some kind of in a lavatory somewhere, or once we got back in the terminal. I was very frightened, and only women know how that feels. She then had the captain come back and talk to me and threaten me with arrest. This is George Bush's War on Terror and Patriot Act gone mad. I said to Frank that Bush's paranoia and megalomania, we have spent millions to help some Iraqi get his farm back, and I am being stared at by someone in coach who looks like he's sizing me up for some kind of fondling. And this is what George Bush has done to my country. Again, I'm sitting in first class. I'm being stared at by a man in coach.
All right, but the police eventually were called in, right?
Yeah, well, what happened was I got out. I walked down the aisle first.
All right, before you tell me what happened, after you got off the plane, I want to give our phone number out. 1-800-449-8686. 1-800-449-8686. Now, again, just to be clear, you were sitting in first class. They wouldn't close the curtains so the man and coach wouldn't stare at you, right?
That is correct, yeah.
And in your mind, this is the Patriot Act?
No, Phil, it's just the paranoia of George Bush's war on terror that doesn't allow me to enjoy sitting in a first-class seat, but I have to be stared at by people in coach, and they didn't pay to sit there, and they won't close the curtains, and this flight attendant, who, yes, I'm sorry I called her that name.
That's a strong name to call somebody.
I am sorry, but again, I thought it was very, very rude of her not to at least close the curtain. She's a flight attendant making $30,000 a year to serve bad coffee and pretend she knows what to do if we're all going to burn alive in a gasoline fire. Do you trust that? Do the American people trust that? And more importantly, Phil, do they trust George Bush's war on terror?
All right, 1-800-449-8686. The Phil Hendry Show, talking with Margaret Gray, nationally syndicated columnist, on being stared at by somebody in coach while she was sitting in first class. Now, let's get back. Was this man a molester?
You know something I never found out, Phil?
Well, tell me the story. You were coming off the gangway.
What happened was I got out. I walked down the aisle first. I could feel my heart beating, as only a woman knows what I'm talking about, really, as your heart beats when you know there's a predator. And as we moved out of the gangway, I felt a man's hand touch me.
Okay.
And squeeze. And I said to myself, you really have to, and women who've been through this know what I'm talking about, I said, stay grounded. I was carrying a Hewlett-Packard computer in a case, and it's fairly heavy, and with all of my might, I swung around and I hit him squarely in the head with it. And it turned out that it was Frank who had grabbed my bottom. So I'm looking at my husband, who's being taken to an airport infirmary. He has a good-sized laceration across his face. And this is George Bush's war on terror. I don't think so.
Well, you hit your husband who had touched you.
The point is, Phil, that this man and coach had been looking at me. And
but when you got squeezed, I assume on your bottom, as you say?
Yes.
You thought it was this guy and it was your husband.
Technically, yes, that is true. But what I'm trying to say to you is, I pay for a first-class ticket. I want the curtain closed. I don't need some man looking at me from a coach seat, staring and smiling.
How do you know he wasn't just trying to be friendly? How do you know?
Phil, I frankly don't. The point is this. I sit in first class for comfort, for the food, for the other people. Why isn't that curtain? If I turn around and I look at some... at these people in coach, it feels as if you're sitting in coach. Do you understand what I'm saying? So the war on terror has robbed me and millions of Americans the right to feel. I don't know whether it's special. And while George Bush sits in his White House with his finger on the button that could blow this entire world to pieces. There are women like me in danger of being fondled here in my home or on an airline. And
all right, but I want the record to show that when you had your rear end squeezed, you thought it was the guy, you came around and hit your own, it was your husband.
That is correct technically, but I really believe, Phil, that this man was on his way to somehow molest me. And George Bush's war on terror puts my husband in a hospital bed.
All right, 1-800-449-8686, 1-800-449-8686. George Bush's war on terror, should it include closing the curtain between first class and coach? Or should it include not being able to close the curtain between first class and coach, especially since people pay a pretty price to sit in first class? Mary, hello, you're on the Phil Hendry Show.
Hi.
Yes, Mary.
I have to tell you, I have never been so outraged in my life as what this lady is saying. It doesn't matter if you're first class or coach, you have to follow the rules. The FAA made those rules for a reason. My daughter is a flight attendant. And I'll tell you what, those flight attendants, a lot of them do not make $30,000 a year. It doesn't matter that they serve bad coffee. They're there to assist the traveler in any way they can. But they have to follow the rules, and all of us have to follow the rules.
Well, close the curtain. Look, she's making $30,000 a year.
What difference does it make how much she's making?
She knows what to do if the plane explodes.
You know, you've said that three times. You haven't said anything else but that.
No,
it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter how much she makes. All that matters is that she has her rules she has to follow.
You know what
and
would
she
be
was
fun? You know what would be fun, Mary? I think you should do this still right now. Who's in favor of the George Bush war on terror, and who's against it?
That's got absolutely nothing to do with whether a person is rude.
Oh, my God. Yes, it does.
Well,
because, I'll tell you, Mary, I fly first class. My husband's well off.
You know, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter how well off you are or your husband. You fly on the same plane. The front of the plane doesn't get there any faster than the back of the plane. If everybody on the plane is polite and courteous to everybody else, you all get along fine. But if one person gets on there with attitude and thinks that they should have things a certain way because they spent a few hundred more dollars for their plane ticket, it doesn't work that way.
I want to make a joke. The front of the plane technically does get there sooner than the back of the plane.
Well, that's quite a joke.
Right,
I'm not laughing.
Well, come on. Secondly,
well, I'll tell you what, if that was my daughter, and my daughter has told me many times of the things she puts up with on the airplane. And after 9/11 happened, most of the time, the people on the plane were very courteous and helpful.
That's
and
right.
They usually assist her now because they don't want to put up with unruly
passengers. And I do, too. But I think the Patriot Act and the George Bush war on terror has made...
Wait a minute. The Patriot Act's got nothing to do with them closing the curtain between first class and coach.
It's all the same paranoia.
But it has
and yet,
to do
I
with
don't get to sit and have food.
Courtesy.
And, Mary, it is different where you live. You live in 42-degree weather. You're not in danger of being molested.
Ma'am, you know nothing about me. I have lived in Japan. I have lived in Germany. I have lived in England.
And the other thing, if I could jump in, Mary, you know, calling her the C word.
I apologize, but frankly, she deserved it.
Calling her that kind of a name?
She did not deserve to be called anything because she was doing her job.
And what about me? What about my husband and I, who we paid premium prices for first-class seats?
What difference does it make? How much you paid?
I have to look at those people. Well, thank you very much.
Well, you're supposed to be facing forward, so you shouldn't have to be looking at the person behind you.
You can feel their eyes burning into the back of your head, staring at you as you eat off of China, as you get drinks when you want. I can feel them. I know the jealousy.
Well, you know what? When the end comes, we all go the same way, basically, and we all end up in the same place.
And if
and
I get molested in baggage claim, then what do you
say? You know, it has nothing to do with how much money. It has to do with what kind of a person you are.
Very true,
you
Mary. Thank you.
People.
I got to take a break, but thank you, Mary, for your call. Margaret, I will tell you.
If I get molested in baggage claim, what do you say then?
I say that there was a predator on the plane, and maybe he would not have spotted you had the curtains been closed.
Thank you. Thank God someone's finally seeing it. If the curtains are closed, some of these people in coach don't see who's sitting in first class. until well after they're off the plane, and those people are not in jeopardy of being molested or robbed. But no, the George Bush War on Terror has the curtains open so this man can see me, size me up for a fondlement.
All right, hold the line. 1-800-449. If she puts it that way, I can understand. But it's not like it's part of the Patriot Act. 1-800-449-8686. People who sit in first class, shouldn't they be allowed to have the curtain closed so that the people in coach can't look at them, size them up for robbing them or otherwise, you know, otherwise attacking them? Has the George Bush War on Terror gone too far? 1-800-449-8686, Phil Henry Show.
The Phil Henry Show, 1-800-449-8686. Phil Henry, drug addict. The Phil Henry Show is back.
I knew her for a long time.
All right, we're back with Margaret Gray from A Little Bird Told Me, the nationally syndicated column. You'll be writing this column about you flying back from the Sundance Film Festival with a flight attendant closed or would not close the curtain between first class and coach. You were in first class. You were being stared at by some guy in coach. Suppose nobody was staring at you, Margaret, in coach. Would you mind if the curtain was open?
You know, it's a good question, but I still would like to have it closed. It's not that I'm a snob. Believe me, Phil, I have been there, done that. It's that you feel a little bit more insulated from a group of people who maybe didn't work as hard as you, who maybe didn't have as many good ideas as you, and as a result can't afford to sit in first class. And I'd rather be talking to and feeling as if the whole plane is for me and my people.
The people in first class.
Yes, but it has nothing to do with disliking them.
All right, let's go to, I believe it's Marcy. Marcy, hi, you're on the Phil Henry Show.
Hi.
Yes, ma'am.
Well, you are a total snob, lady, and you really need a reality check, and
How do you seem like that?
You got one. You are a snob. You know, anybody who is a real person, an authentic person, has friends in every category.
Absolutely.
And can talk. Well, no, absolutely. That's not you, and that's not what you said.
I can slum it with the best of them.
You know, you are the paranoid one. You're talking about George Bush. You've already decided a guy's going to molest you or try to. And the guy hasn't even spoken to you.
He's staring at me throughout. He's smiling when he looks at me.
Maybe he's being
friendly.
Forgive
him for smiling.
I'm not.
But, you know, I didn't
ask for him to be arrested. I asked for some curtains to be closed so he couldn't be looking at my body.
Yeah, and you were patronizing. And well, you don't know that he was looking at your body.
When I got up to get my computer out of the overhead compartment, he's looking me up and down like I'm some kind of a piece of meat.
Well, I mean, that's your opinion and your take on it, but you don't know that for sure. And you were very patronizing toward a professional who, you know, these flight attendants are professionals and they do know their job. And you're acting like just because she makes a lower salary than you, that she doesn't have a right to obey rules.
That
you can overrule her in rules that she's been giving.
I think flight attendants do a wonderful job. But look,
well, let me just say one more thing.
Just so that they can, you know, they make us believe they know what to do if the plane is spinning wildly out of control after being hit by a surface-to-air missile.
All right, look,
you said that over and over, but I have one more thing to say. You know,
you were talking about that
you want to be with people that have worked harder. You know, there are people, ma'am, that have worked a lot harder than you, but maybe they don't have the breaks you've had, and they're sitting back in coach, or they're riding
Hey, Marcy, I got a better story. Marcy, I got a better story. Victor Kiam, who owned Remington, the razor company.
Absolutely.
Victor Kiam never flew first class. He says the biggest waste of his company's money. He always flew coach. He put his computer on his lap. This man was worth millions and millions of dollars.
Well, you know, I don't believe that story.
Well, it's true. He said so in an interview.
I think, ma'am, that you are taking yourself way too serious. Somebody has told you you're wonderful and you've believed it. And you know what? I hope that the curtain stays open.
You know, I'd like to ask, are you married to a stare freak?
What? It's too bad if you've been
inconvenient. The reason you don't think that man did anything wrong by staring at me is he's the type of man who's a stare freak, and maybe you're into guys like that.
You don't. No, I'm not going to judge a person because maybe they were staring off.
He's looking me up and down like I'm a side of beef.
Well, then ignore it. I mean, can't you do that? You're supposed to be so educated and cultured and refined. Ignore him.
Then what
turn around and
you know, you've been co-opted by the George Bush War on Terror. The Patriot Act is going to turn you into just another person with a tattoo on your wrist.
Well, you know what? You're taking an experience you had and connecting it to the Patriot
Act.
How
do I ignore a man who wishes he could have a big piece of me?
All right, listen, Marcy, very good points. Thank you. 1-800-449-8686. The war on terror, she can't sit in first class without the curtain being open. Phil Henry Show.
The Phil Henry Show is back.
I'm talking with Margaret Gray about an experience she had in an airplane flying back from the Sundance Film Festival. You say you were being stared at while you were sitting in first class by someone sitting in coach. And because of the war on terror, they are not allowed to close those curtains between first class and coach. I understand that. But we have said, why not ignore the guy? Why not?
Phil, I asked the flight attendant to close it. I mean,
it's a violation of FAA rules for her to close it.
I didn't want to bring this up, but I want to say something, and I want to put this as delicately as I can. First of all, I'm a mother. I have a young son that I love very much, and I know how every mother loves her child. The individual that was staring at me in coach was, and I'll use the word, he was retarded.
All right, so?
It's a little disquieting to see someone looking at you with their head tilted to one side, eating a piece of bologna.
The boy was retarded.
He wasn't a boy. He was a man, I'd probably say, in his early 30s.
So he was someone who looked as if he might be developmentally disabled?
Yeah, okay, Phil. Developmentally disabled. Whatever you want to say. I use the French, retard. But the man was...
retard?
Yes.
All right, I don't know.
Exactly. And that's why I don't think you can make a comment.
1-800-449-8686. Should they close the curtain between first class and coach? Does it invade the privacy of those people in first class? Is this another example of George Bush's insane war on terror? Don, go ahead. You're on the Phil Henry Show with Margaret Gray.
Was that for Don?
Yes, Don. Go right ahead. Sorry.
Okay, yeah. Thank you. First of all, let me correct just one thing she said before the last break. They didn't tattoo us on the wrist, so she's just talking blah, blah to be heard. Our tattoos are between our elbows and our wrist. I'm a survivor of Buchwald in 44. Onto her subject, which is completely ridiculous.
It's called Buchenwald, not Buchwald. That was Art Buchwald you were thinking.
You need to study Yiddish, lady, and you say it the proper way.
Have respect for this man's experience, will you?
Well, he said Buchwald.
I know what he said, and I think he knows where he's been.
It's a classicism that this lady has. That's what they used to lock second and third class passengers below the elite decks, you know, on our liners, and let them drown. This lady is an absolute lunatic.
You're being silly.
You're an absolute lunatic, lady.
Well, first of all, how old are you? Let me ask you, how old are you?
I'm 65.
So how could you have been? At Buchenwald or at Buchenwald?
Do the math, lady. In 44, I was 5 years old. In 45, I was 6 years old. I was born in 39.
If you were five, it must have been fun. They didn't do things.
Oh, come on! Don't be stupid.
Yeah, thank you, Phil. Anyway, let's get to her subject here. This gentleman on the airliner that the passengers just took over, who on a cell phone called his wife in Pennsylvania. He was calling from the midships steward station, and that's where the curtain between first class and coach is. He was a coach passenger. Now, the security people took these curtains down, so anybody on that airplane, from any position on the airplane, can see when the command area, the pilot area, if there's a problem.
Oh, I don't know about all of
that's
this.
What it's
I'm
about.
Simply saying the man that was staring at me had his head tilted to one side.
Look, lady, that's your problem.
There was a retard.
That's your problem. That is absolutely your
problem.
There's
nothing more unsettling than for an overweight man wearing overalls and mouse ears, eating bologna and drooling, and looking at you. How am I? Oh, my God.
Three breaks ago, you described fondling in baggage. Is that a sex statement or what?
No, I was afraid that I would be fondled in baggage claim. And
you're sick. Don't you understand that you're sick?
How could that be sick?
That's not a normal concern.
You know something? When a 40-year-old man eating bologna and wearing mouse ears is staring at you throughout an entire plane ride,
lady,
it's safe to assume you're going to have some part of your erogenous area.
Don't you recognize it?
Fingered.
Yeah, you know, I'm with you, Don.
Don,
you're making this into sexist, you know.
No, Don, bless your heart. Bless your heart, but you really need to heal your old wounds. Get over yourself
you're whatever other talk show hosts talk is a left-wing wacko. That's how I see you.
You know something, Don.
You're totally out in space. You ought to have antennas coming off your head.
If a man is licking bologna, staring at you, what do you think?
If the man is developmentally disabled, as I said, if he is suffering from some kind of retardation or whatever you want to call it, then you just consider the source for the poor guy. He might have been fascinated by earrings you were wearing, some jewelry you were wearing. Maybe he was looking past you and out a window.
Well, guys are really twisted.
And what makes you so special? What makes you the almighty here that gets to, just because you make more money, and you don't make more money than me, trust me, and I fly coach, what makes you so elite that you get to protect yourself? How about the other 15 passengers?
We were sitting in first class. Look, the man
How about
was
the rest of the people? Are there any other weirdos in first class?
Can I ask them? The man was licking bologna and sticking it on the window, and I'm supposed to sit there and think that's normal. And you call me sick.
Yeah, but put your eye blinders on and go to sleep. Pull the shades down so people can see the TV. Be a human being. Be cooperative.
Did you have any men licking bologna at Art Buchwald's house? No.
The man was at Buchenwald. It was a concentration camp. If you say Art Buchwald's house one more time, I'm going to hang up on you.
You see, Phil, you've been affected, you and this guy, by the George Bush War on Terror. So the both of you can go straight to the hot place. Goodbye.
Oh, she hung up. She hung up on us.
Well, you know, actually, it's good that your listeners hear points of view like that, because that's really unfortunate that we have attitudes like that out in the country.
Well, you know, one of the problems is that I don't think anybody quite, a lot of people don't quite realize, Don, as I'm sure you've surmised yourself, that 9/11 actually happened. I think they think it just was a blip on the radar, and we're back to life. No, wait a second. She called back? If you hang up on me one more time, ma'am.
Phil, I want to say one thing. Is the caller still there?
Yes, ma'am.
Is the caller there? Okay. The man was sticking bologna.
Get out of here. Okay, Don, thanks for your call and your experience there in Europe during the war. One can only imagine, but I'm sure it made you a better person. Thank you.
Yeah. Bad,
all right, sir.
You.
Bye-bye. Were you at Art Buchwald's house? Yeah?
He was using the bologna to shade the sun for the love of Jesus.
1-800-449-8686, Phil Hendry Show.
The Phil Hendry Show, 1-800-449-8686. You can all go straight to the nether reaches. Bill Henry Show is back. 1-800-449-8686.
1-800-449-8686, the number here on the Phil Henry Show, and our web address is www.philhenryshow.com, and that's where you can go to get a backstage pass and hear all this jazz that you're listening to right now once again, if you'd like to, or some stuff that maybe you haven't heard. In fact, we're going to be featuring what we call our Clip of the Week, and that means that every week we'll have a different clip featured, so you can click onto that and listen to it. It's just like it's from all over the place. These different things are from different years and different eras of the Phil Henry Show. Like this week's clip features Dave Oliva, and he believes that onion dip shouldn't be served at Super Bowl parties. Believe me, I have no idea what that one's about. I got no clue. I mean, it sounds pretty messed up. But let's just look at it. It says, Dave Oliva does not want onion dip served at his Super Bowl party. That's right, that's our clip of the week. And underneath it, a nice team picture of the crew. Mark Newman, myself, Janice and Garrow, Doug Jones, and Chris Pelton. You can see our ugly mugs, except for Janice. She's cute. And then you can go and of course, go into our souvenir shop. So it's all there at www.philhenryshow.com. And then in my travels, while we were doing that Margaret bit, I logged on to IMDb because I had some idea that I wanted the guy that she was staring at to be maybe have a disfigured face. So I looked up Frankenstein 1970 on IMDb. This was a real movie with Boris Karloff. Listen to this plot summary. This is bitchin'. Listen to this plot summary. Frankenstein 1970. It came out in 1958. And I have no idea what the 1970 it refers to, other than the fact he's the Frankenstein of the future. But here it is. Baron Victor von Frankenstein, played by Boris Karloff, has fallen on hard times. He was tortured at the hands of the Nazis for not cooperating with them during World War II, and he is now badly disfigured. As his family's wealth begins to run out, the Baron is forced to allow a TV crew shooting a documentary on his monster-making ancestors to film at his castle in Germany. However, the Baron has some ideas of his own. Using the money from the crew's rent, he buys an atomic reactor and uses it to create a hulking monster, transplanting his butler's brain into the thing and using it to kill off the crew for more spare parts. Now, if that ain't a great movie, I don't know what the hell is. That's solid. But instead, we had Margaret being stared at by a poor man who had mental disability, so he was looking at her with a tilted head, licking bologna and sticking it on the window of the airliner. Jesus. All right, 1-800-449-8686. Somebody is suing Starbucks. Now, dig this. This is another one of these it-was-too-hot cases. Lawyer Matthew Marlin had the reaction he admits most people would have when a woman talked to him about suing because she got burned by coffee. I thought, oh, great, another McDonald's case. However, and if you remember in the McDonald's case, a jury awarded a New Mexico woman nearly $3 million in 1999 after she was burned by spilled coffee. A judge later reduced the punitive damages to $480,000, and she eventually settled for an undisclosed sum that was under $600,000. Marlon said the lawsuit he filed for Molly Alter on Friday in Madison County, and this is, I believe, in, I don't know where the hell, Arkansas or some joint, is different because a defective cup caused the spill. The suit was filed against Starbucks on behalf of this lady, Molly Alder, a Southern Illinois University graduate student who bought a cup of coffee at Starbucks shop on campus December the 3rd. It was not an accidental spill. He claims the cup was bent or creased, causing hot coffee to spill onto her hands. She's studying metalsmithing, but missed classes and had to take grades of incomplete in three courses because her hands were bandaged like two clubs. There was something wrong with the club. Somebody should have caught that. The coffee spilled after she walked 20 to 30 feet from the store. She suffered second-degree burns and lost a layer of skin on both hands. Oh, my ass. This is another one of these news stories that you got to know how to read, sports fans. So let's move into that mode, shall we? She walked 20 to 30 feet from the store. She suffered you know what a second degree burn is, don't you? It's like a sunburn that when you peel, that's a sunburn. That's a second degree burn. Okay? Now, scalding hot coffee is going to cause more than just skin to peel off. Scalding hot coffee is going to cause permanent scarring. So therefore, because she wasn't scalded, which would be a very serious burn requiring a burn unit care, because she wasn't scalded, they got to come up with a new one. I know, she's in a metalsmithing class. Okay, I mean, I'd like to know when she enrolled in her metalsmithing class. Maybe she saw the coffee burning her hands and said, I'm going to get over and enroll in metalsmithing, and then I'll call a lawyer, and it's going to be really, really great. I don't know if that's what happened, but a second-degree burn, and that her hands were bandaged up like clubs. Well, you know, you go to an emergency room and a doctor, they're going to put a whole lot of ointment, antibiotic ointment, and they're going to bandage it up, and they're going to put your thumb, they'll probably, you know, tape the thumb in, too. So, yeah, you look like a seal. Whatever, dude. So then, the guy says that she's studying metalsmithing and has missed classes and had to take grades of incomplete in three courses because her hands were bandaged like two clubs. He's seeking a judgment in excess of 50 grand, which is a legal requirement. If it's going to be in excess of 50 grand, you have to say. He probably hasn't settled on a number, but I guarantee it's probably up around, you know, the six figure range. Starbucks spokesman said money she could not comment on the suit because the company had not yet seen it. The director of the Illinois lawsuit Abuse Watch, based in Troy, said his organization believes plaintiffs like Alter are entitled to appropriate recovery when they're injured by defective products, but in Madison County, which has a reputation of being a plaintiff's paradise, that's not always the case. Okay, so already they're looking at this thing, and I hate Starbucks. And here I am talking and defending these guys. Because you remember that lawsuit, Janice, last month against, was it Smith and Walensky, or it was the food joint? They found a condom in their clam chowder, huh? Yeah, funny how that story went away, too. These people that are looking for the easy dollar, man, really make me want to chirp. I feel like just pitching up blood. Can't you make an honest dollar? Can't you people who want to sue every time? And these people, these professional litigators... This woman up here with the kid, this poor little boy who may have been molested, she's done it. So already she's suspect because she's gone out suing people. And they look into the background of that lady with that freaking lottery ticket. She's suing people. This is a whole racket, man. Along comes some student who just a woman who happens to be in metalsmithing. I don't doubt that there are women in metalsmithing, but it just also happened to have her hands burned and also just happened to have them burned really bad by a cup of coffee that she also just happened to get from a company that's worth a lot of money, man. A lot of freaking dough, baby. You going to sue Harry's Coffee Shop, huh? Huh? You going to burn your hands on Harry's Coffee down there at the corner of 5th and Main? Some guy with hairy armpits serving you up that coffee in one of them little cups? No, you ain't going to sue him, but it just so happens you got your hands burned at Starbucks. Cats are made out of money. I got a prediction that one's going to go south. But getting back onto Starbucks and how much I hate it, I would love to see those guys go out of business because I'm so addicted to their coffee that Chris had to go over and get me another one. And that's what I'm talking about. I drink your coffee and I hate myself for it. And the other thing, did I tell you I went in there with the Swede the other day and we got coffee? Did I tell you? And the guy behind the counter was doing his whole Starbucks number again. He had the spiked hair with 85 earrings. And he says, okay, sir, what are you going to have? And I said, you know, I'll have this. And he says, and what about this guy? He's talking about my friend, the Swede. This guy? Listen, punk. Make me that coffee or something bad's going to happen, man. I'm going to let the ghoul out of the vault. 1-800-449-8686. Anybody for any coffee? I hear it's scalding hot. I mean, I hear it's delicious over at Starbucks. Phil Hendry Show.
1-800-449-8686. The world famous Phil Hendry Show.